Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you whisper.
Yes, indeed. Let's get started here tonight. We have two interesting gentlemen in the house, Mark Coley and Russ Victorian. Stay tuned.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
They say when things go bump in the night, one should simply turn around and walk away. However, in the case of my two founders and investigators, Russ Victorian and Mark Coley, they would not turn and walk away. They would run toward the activity. Russ Victorian is the founder of the Search for Spirits Paranormal Investigation and Healing Team. He is also part of the online sister organization, Search for Heaven. A 33-year Army veteran, Victorian refers to himself as a spiritual health advisor for both the living and the dead, and has involved himself in a number of supernatural and Christian ventures, both online and in person. He believes he is a tool for Christ as a liaison between heaven and earth. He's a blogger for topics such as supernatural and Christianity. He is also a website manager, a seer of good, evil, and apocalyptic messages and events, and the founder of the Help for Homeless Project, which is a logistics organization that assists homeless shelters in getting hard-to-get items that are not donated by mainstream organizations. Mark Coley is the lead investigator for Search for Spirits, whose goal is to help free people of their supernatural issues. He is a 24-year Army veteran who enjoys spending time in haunted locations and learning new things about the supernatural in every investigation. Together, Mark and Russ work as a team who enjoy paranormal happenings and also enjoy cracking a mystery. We had a lot to talk about this evening, so sit back and enjoy our show this evening with Russ Victorian and Mark Coley. Well, good evening, gentlemen, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Well, this is exciting. I've got two of my favorite guys, and I'll tell you, we've got Russ and we've got Mark, and we're going to have a very interesting conversation tonight. So I think we better get at it. So, gentlemen, I'm going to teeter-totter between you two here. And the very first question that I usually ask in the interview of each of you will be, I want you to go back as far as you can remember and try and figure out whether what type of experience, or if you had an experience at all, or where your interest may have lied in anything to do perhaps with the paranormal. Let's start there. One of you take it from there.
Well, I think one of the things that and a lot of my insights came from hindsights. You know, when I was young, I was not quite understanding all of the things that I was experiencing. It was years and years later when I looked back that I realized that I was potentially having dreams that deceased people were putting into my mind. And they were showing me tidbits of their lives. Sometimes it was their death. Sometimes it was a part of their life that they were proud of, you know. And I didn't realize it over the years until much later. And I'm like, look what's been going on all these years. And it was really eye-awakening for me. The dreams played a big role in it.
Okay, so I'm gonna jump in here for a second and ask you a couple more questions on that. Because when I was 3, 4, 5 years old, I was actually having dreams myself. And I was having premonitions and I was having visions. And then the next day I would actually see them on television. And for the longest time, I thought, isn't this kind of weird? Now, as a little tyke, at first you don't think much of it. And then all of a sudden, I actually thought I was causing this stuff because I was actually seeing this stuff in my dreams. And then it would show up on TV. And to this day, by the way, I still have once in a while those occurrences. So I'm going to focus this back on you. No, as a tyke, I never thought much of it until it started to seem a little odd. How old were you, Russ, when this was happening?
The dreams were happening as far back potentially as 7, 8 years old. We moved houses every 5 years, so I have a pretty good idea about when that was based on the house we were in and about when it was. So, yeah, about 7 or 8 years old, the physical experiences, I thought I saw a man on the neighbor's roof. I mean, there's little things that even today, can I validate them? No. But, you know, based on the history of these dreams and the fact that they continue today, I've validated them through a lot of different ways since then.
Yeah, it's interesting. Say, Mark, have you ever had anything like that? Or when was the, what happened with you? How young were you when you first had an awakening of either something paranormal or extraterrestrial or anything like that?
So I would say it started right around 6 or 7. I would have nightmares. So I don't remember a lot of those. I remember a few reoccurring dreams, but I would also see there was a figure, like a man would stand in my doorway. I could see things running around on my ceiling, not really see what they were, but like dark shadows. And one time for fun, my mom had hung a spider plant and it burst into flies. I don't know if I was kind of in between that dream state, but it did that. It terrified me when it happened. And then I woke up and it was fine, but.
Okay. So that was in a dream state when you woke up, the spider plant was still plant, right?
Intact. Yes. It didn't continue on. Thankfully, I think that would have been worse.
But. So for both of you in terms of now, Russ, you said that you've moved around a bit. Mark, did you stay? Were you in your house for a lengthier period of time, or did you also move around a bit?
That particular house, we had moved from the East Coast to Minnesota, and that particular house we were in from about that time until I graduated.
Okay, until you graduated.
The house for quite a long time.
Was the house an older? Now, again, I have to premise this that. Just because it's an older house doesn't mean that it's always going to be haunted. Right. I have lived in structures that were newer and they were as, if not more haunted. It just depends on the situation, the environment, the energy. So, Mark, what kind of, was it an older house or where did you kind of live?
It was an older house. It was built in 1910.
1910. Okay.
Yes. And yeah, there were things throughout the years, especially when I was younger. That would happen, that I would see, you know, different spirits. And
you know, when you're in a dream state and something bursts into flies like that and everything, you begin to wonder where all this is coming from, and you might have seen kind of shadows on the ceiling or within the house. What kinds of other things did you experience?
There would be things, especially when we're just a little bit older and my parents would leave us, things would just get thrown off of shelves in the basement. Sometimes my brother and I would sit and watch TV, and in the porch through the kitchen window you could see a figure pop its head up, and then we would run and, you know, to see if something was out there, and there was nothing out there. So there was a lot of like odd things like that happening throughout the time, but especially when we were alone in the house, then things would, in the basement, things would get thrown around and startle us. pretty nicely.
Yeah, I can relate to that because things, when I was nine to 17 in my grandmother's house, and that house was built in the late 1800s, that's when stuff would happen. But when my grandparents were there, well, of course, nothing happened, right? And it's all your imagination. I was going to ask you about that figure, though, for a moment that poked its head around the corner or whatever. Could you make out whether it was translucent or more solid? Do you recall what you saw there?
Looked solid. It was, the porch was dark, but you could see it pop up on the other side of the window, and the porch doors were always locked. You would hear if, you know, somebody was going in there. So yeah, it almost looked solid from what mm-hmm. we could see, but it popped up, popped back down, really too fast to see it fully, but yeah. It was head and shoulders.
Yeah, that would scare the bejesus out of me. Russ, how about you? Chime in here. So now you're in one place and then you're having experiences and now you're going to other places. Were you still having experiences or how did this evolve for you?
The dreams were sporadic throughout the years. It did not matter which of the houses we lived in. It just seems that connection, you know, and I've never been able to attach it to a particular trauma, you know, maybe something that happened when I was younger. But I mean, I had a great upbringing. Everything seemed pretty normal. We lived in probably the oldest house in town. It was the oldest, one of the older farmhouses in town. And maybe the fact that the first couple started there and it just seemed to carry with me, you know, almost, I wouldn't call it a portal, so to speak, but once they started, they never stopped. Let's just say that.
Mm-hmm. So, how did you validate your dreams or these visions back then? You would have things come to you. You would see them. How would you validate them? Because for me, mine were validated on television the next day. And they would show up and it'd be identical to what I had seen in my dream or my vision. And so how did you come to learn over time that there was some kind of a connection with that?
Well, I think the key for it is that some of the dreams were flavored with that supernatural aspect. Mm-hmm. Like, and I can remember most of them, you know, some of them were reoccurring dreams mm-hmm. where like I walked down a set of steps and I'm at somebody's house. And I look over and there's a back set of steps in the house. And at the same time I'm coming down, a spirit's coming down the steps. Mm-hmm. And the spirit looks at me. And I'm looking at it and I don't even know what it is. You know, I'm young. And it's like, Russ, you know, and it calls out my name. Mm. And it just, even in the dream, you know, just shakes you awake.
Yeah.
You know, so the intensity of some of those. But, I'll be honest with you. At that time, the validation was not even a thought in my mind. The interesting thing enough, you know, as I've grown in my wisdom and spirituality and all that stuff, at the time, for years, I thought there was the potential that those dreams I was having was me dying each time.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I, you know, became more experienced that I suddenly realized that's not me dying over and over.
Mm-hmm.
That is somebody showing me their death. And we've validated that now more so in the 11 years that we've been working as a team, where if I have a dream, and this is probably one of my best examples, I had a dream that a guy was showing me this eggplant where they produced eggs and stuff. And he showed me his workshop and he showed me all this stuff. He showed me his family and how proud he was. And we had a case coming up that weekend. So the day before we went to the case, I called her up and I said, I had this incredible dream about this guy who works at an eggplant. What do you think? Do you know anybody that works at an eggplant?
And didn't you know his name as well?
Yeah.
You find his name.
Yep.
Yeah.
And found out that an eggplant was the primary source of work for most everybody in this town back in the day.
Huh.
And I had no idea. I didn't have any of that information.
It was right next to their property.
Yeah, and it was very close to their property. And so this spirit, and that has become kind of a tradition now where we pay, and we're very sensitive to what we dream prior to a case, because a lot of times, like you say, that comes out in the case a little while later.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things about dreams, which I think everyone can relate to, or at least most of us can, is that as soon as you have a dream and you wake up, you remember it right away, pretty fresh. And then all of a sudden, 5-10 minutes later, you can't remember your dream anymore, or at least bits of it. If it's really impactful, you'll remember it. So did you find yourself really taking note of your dreams a little bit more right off the bat once you woke up and writing this stuff down versus losing that information?
Definitely. When I was in my 20s already, I was writing down a lot of my dreams. I've been journaling for years. It's been a great tool. But the dreams I had between 7 and, say, 15 mm-hmm. were so intense mm-hmm. that I didn't journal them until I was probably 20 years old. Mm-hmm. But I remember those dreams with such, I mean, every moment in those dreams I can still remember. They're in my head right now. They never go away.
Right. Mark, were you ever, I don't want to say a dreamer, but did you ever have anything similar to that?
I did. I had some reoccurring dreams. And then I've had dreams, you know, lately that I don't have to write them down. They're, like he said, they're just so clear. Mm-hmm. But I did have this reoccurring dream for a good number of years. It was the same thing every time. It was pretty interesting.
Was it a scary dream, or was it something that was trying to tell you something? Or
I don't know. I mean, if you want, I can tell you quickly. It's not
sure. Of course,
It would start out. It's kind of like we're almost like gypsies, and mm-hmm. we would set up this camp, and we would set it up in the shadow of this really tall tower, mm-hmm. and the men and boys. I was a lad at the time. Would be sitting on these balconies. Mm-hmm. And I would never know how I got up there, but I would be sitting there and there'd be horrendous noises coming from inside the tower, you know, so you'd never want to go down it. And you could gaze down at the camp with all the campfires and hear the music and just wish you were down there. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden morning would come and I would be down there. And then this one of the girls in the camp would fall in the river. I would jump in to save her. We would flow up a waterfall, and then they would pull us out.
Wow.
That was the same dream every... It was the same every time I dreamed it, so, which is multiple times.
Yeah, our dreams are very, very interesting, but what scares me on my end is when I dream something, and then it literally... I mean, if it's something... My dreams are more... and you probably can relate to this, catastrophic, you know, something horrible is happening or will happen. And next thing you know it, you're watching it on TV the next day. And I those are the things that you can't control. I mean, those are the things that it's like, well, what kind of message do you want me to get from this other than the fact that I just saw it in my dream, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So tell me a little bit more. So both of you are evolving over time. Obviously, you're starting to recognize that you're having a few gifts and I call them gifts or abilities that you can't necessarily explain. The next thing I think everyone wants to know here is, how did you two come together?
So Russ and I were in the military. We were in different units, but we knew each other. And we had a mutual friend that we would both talk to, you know, separately. And she came to Russ and said, hey, you should, you know, talk to Mark. You guys have a lot of the same stories and interests. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the beginning of it. Mm-hmm.
Hey, we just started a conversation. We ran into each other at the local county fair. I said, hey, our mutual friend said that you like this stuff. And we talked a little bit, decided to meet, and it just clicked. The team was already in place. Mm-hmm. A few years before then, I was working with a variety of people. But, I mean, the team came together when he and I became a team, really. Because mm-hmm. We created a mission statement that we wanted to help people. You know, we had mutual, you know, we had mutual interests in how we wanted to manage it. And
So tell us a little bit about the mission of what you guys do. You're a paranormal team, investigators. I would also add researchers probably, or at least citizen researchers onto that, which means that, you know, from a citizen standpoint, I'm a citizen researcher, which means that I don't belong to a team per se, but when I go places and I do have experiences, and if they're significant, of course, to me, I usually write them down and then I write a chapter about them in a book. And so it's my contribution of an experience that I have gone through that can't necessarily be explained. So what is the mission then of what you guys do?
I would say the primary mission, it's kind of our mission statement, is to help bring peace to both the living and to the deceased souls. And we say that because we're very consistent with our framework that we think a lot of the spirits do want to cross. They're a little uncomfortable with being here. I'm not saying all of them, but we have EVP after EVP that says, I'm stuck. Help me. I'm lost. I'm stuck in a box. I'm this. Help me, help me, help me. And through that period of time, we're like, we want to offer these souls the option to cross into the light. Other people have different references for it, but that's what we often call it. And we feel that we're helping them. And at the same time, some households you go to, we've had probably 200 plus cases of homes and businesses where they are uncomfortable with having an estranged or unseen spirit energy in their home, and they ask us to try to take care of it, or at least give them a chance to cross or move on. And so that's the other part about it. We get a lot of cases. Yes, they want help. They want peace in their house. And that's why we go there to help both the living and the dead.
Okay. So my experience with that is that when people attempt to rid or cross over some of these spirits, that sometimes it's temporary and they come back, or they maybe didn't leave to begin with and they just went silent. What has your experiences been like regarding your attempts to cross some of these things over, but yet somehow they reoccur and come back to the home?
So I would say one of the biggest things with a returning spirits is the homeowner or whoever, they're not doing the work. They're not continuing on with recommendations that we've given them. And basically it can invite that spirit back. Not that, you know.
Yeah. Well, for instance, like we removed an energy from a home, and we have this thing we call the 72-hour period, where it takes 72 hours for the energy to kind of get to where it needs to go. And we always say that first 72 hours, don't be concerned if there's some knocking, a bad dream, this, that. That's natural. But after the 72 hours, that's why we always call 5 days later to see how the last 48 hours went. And in most cases, they're clear. But we get cases where the next day or 2 days later, somebody pops by their house, a neighbor that they haven't even talked to pops by. They've been drinking. They beg their way into the house. Or another case, what, they went to a cemetery,
she,
right?
Yeah, she went to a cemetery. She said, I don't visit cemeteries. That's not what I do, but I felt compelled to do it. Yeah. She brought it back into the house.
Oh, so interesting.
Those are the cases where occasionally we've had to return because of the fact that something has happened. They've allowed it to be invited back into the home. It was gone, and they allowed it back in.
Let's talk about that cemetery situation here for a second, because there's a lot of people that do go to cemeteries. There are theories out there from some that say that some people believe that once somebody dies and they're in a cemetery, that they're not even there anymore. Some people believe that when they're in a cemetery, that everybody's there. Some people believe that there's some negative entities hanging out in cemeteries. And I have experienced all of that, okay? And so, and I've had conversations with maybe my relatives, maybe somebody else in a cemetery. So then, of course, the question here goes to attachment. And why do you think that woman felt compelled to go to this cemetery? What brought her there? And why was that necessary for that, probably that apparition or entity who should have just returned back to its grave or gone to the light or whatever? Did it attach itself to her to be brought back into the home? Can you go into that a little bit more for me?
Well, I think one of the key factors is the fact that they're not all human. There's a variety of different things out there. And even the deceased souls themselves are in a variety of, just like we have different sensitivities or gifts, like you call them.
Yeah.
They have different sensitivities and gifts as well in the deceased realms. And some of them are much stronger. And we talk with clients a lot. And we go to cases where I can hold up a can of Coke and I say, what's this? And they say, Coke. We go to another case, they see us as upside down. We go to another case where they only see us as a color. So the spirits are all mixed in with a variety of sensitivities of their own that one has to really take into effect.
Hmm.
And but again, they're not all human. There's a variety of different things. And so in some of the cases, I think the ones that are coming back aren't necessarily always human either.
Yeah.
Even the same spirits that left.
Yep, could be totally.
You know, because for her, she's still sensitive to it, and she's drawn out of basically what's a protected space for her right now. You know, everything's going as planned. She gets drawn out to a spot where she can pick something up. Is it the same thing that was there before? Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah.
You know, but.
Like a period of vulnerability, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah.
After the case is done.
Mm-hmm. Now, how can you determine, because once, as I progressed in my own experiences over time, how can you determine, and you just kind of hit on it a minute ago, and maybe you both have some thoughts about this. There came a point for me where everything that when I was younger seemed to be spiritual, and then it turned into paranormal. And then all of a sudden it went from paranormal and it turned into more extraterrestrial or something like that, or maybe a combination of everything combined. So when you talk about non-human or something of a different energy source or whatever, how do you know which is which after a while? Have you guys been able to be at this long enough to be able to determine what we call paranormal or spiritual or extraterrestrial or whatever? What are your thoughts on that? Either one of you.
We do. If, you know, like Russ said, human spirits are, they're all different. They're, you know, they have different things they can do and see. And, but, you know, they, it's kind of the same when they're there, you know, how they communicate, what they do. Let's say a darker energy. There are signs that it's there, that we can see. And, you know, that's what the investigation is for, is to figure out what is going on. And we take the things that we hear and see and our equipment picks up, and we put together a game plan on how to take care of whatever's there.
'Cause a lot of times you pick up those key things. We do at least 3 audio sessions utilizing different sources of equipment and stuff. And then we take all the information from all 3 or even more sometimes. And we take all the key parts and see how it all fits. And sometimes, how do we know? We can measure. And like I say, if we run into certain types of energy, darker type energies, we've learned to, we know what parts of the body we're sensitive to when it comes to that type of, I hate to even say the word, but you know, the darker energies. Mm-hmm. We can measure the 666 on equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's quite common. We've walked into somebody who is been working in the occult, and we laid a thermometer on her spell book, and it dropped instantly to the 666. I mean, little things like that. We've come up with all kinds of checklists that tell us what we are dealing with, and that goes along with our experience as well. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we feel them? What messages are they pushing in our heads? I mean, there's just numerous ways, really, after you do it for a while.
Mm-hmm. I think that's remarkable. I think that that's a skill. I think that that's experience, and the professionalism that you guys go about this is truly remarkable to me. A lot of people that are novices that go about this and they don't know what they're dealing with, they don't have any clue as to the energy that they're walking into. I myself, when I first started, just generally, you know, going in, I wanted to go to a haunted place. I was completely vulnerable and opened myself up to all kinds of things, and have had some pretty frightening experiences. Have either of you ever had anything real frightening where you thought to yourselves, boy, this, we're kind of way over our head on this?
Probably one of our first, and I just keep calling them dark cases, mm-hmm. where there was an unclean spirit,
mm-hmm.
and the unclean spirit was throwing stuff around the house, and we were green.
It was breaking windows.
It was breaking windows. It was throwing knives. Green.
Yeah.
We knew it was an unclean spirit doing it, and we weren't absolutely sure of how to do it, but we're just like, God, you need to guide us through this. Jesus, guide us. And he did. But so we got the unclean spirit out of the house. Mm-hmm. He circles around the house, and we had laid a crucifix in front of the door to keep him out with salt and all kinds of stuff. And he whipped that crucifix through the house so hard. And so we knew what we were dealing with, and we got him out of the house. And, but we weren't, this is years ago, we weren't experienced on all the places and all the things that we needed to do to take care of business.
Mm-hmm.
And we came home that night, and we're sitting in the garage, and there was a hula hoop sitting in the corner of the garage, and the hula hoop started going around, and we're like, Mark's like, oh no.
We brought it with us.
and so we learned fast some of the skills. But that said, I have a compassion for the fact that not all teams experience this. Certain teams are given these types of cases through the supernatural realms that can handle it, so to speak. I don't want to say it in a way that other people can't, but that, you know, we're trained now to handle these types of cases, and we seem to get a lot of those types of cases.
Mm-hmm.
But we all got our own sensitivities and direction when it comes to the paranormal.
Mm-hmm. Well, that also brings me to the question of you two and or additional members of your team. How many people are on your team generally, or is it just you two?
Ooh, that's a big question, because we're not traditionally a team. We have 35 to 40 people around the state of Minnesota who are on a calling list, so to speak, that if we travel in that direction or we need somebody, we call, we send them a text, say, hey, are you available this night, this town? We don't have group meetings. Essentially, me and Mark manage the team from our hometown of St. Cloud here.
Mm-hmm.
And the cases and the interviews and all that are handled in-house between me and him. And then we choose the investigators based on the type of case, because we know that some investigators aren't trained or haven't had the experiences, and we want to make sure they're safe too.
And right. One thing we do as well is we try to have at least one group event a year, so these folks can get to meet each other.
Right. Work together.
You know, because if we grab somebody from southern Minnesota, they probably wouldn't have met the person up north that we use. And so we try to do that once or twice a year, where we do a fun event. And
Yeah, we just had one at Chase on the Lake.
Oh.
And we had a nice group up there. Mm-hmm. And they get to meet, mingle, practice their sensitivities, and get to know each other a little bit. So when Mark and I, when we need them, they're kind of ready to go, at least have the basics down.
Mm-hmm. I was talking with these gentlemen before the show that one of the things that has happened in my life with my husband is that the more experiences that I started to have, or the more we subjected ourselves to haunted locations and had experiences, now my husband is also experiencing things that he had never experienced before. You two seem to work fairly close together, it seems like. And so would you say that your energy of each other aids in a stronger ability to be able to do the work that you do, or be able to sense the things that you're sensing, just because your energies combined together seem to, I don't know, turn the light on? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would say that Russ and I really, you know, work well together. We, you know, my strengths buoy up the team, his strengths buoy up the team. And, you know, it, yeah, we really clicked, and our investigations go really well. We, you know, just everything just flows well as we set up the investigation. We talk it through before we get there, you know, get it laid out, make our tweaks, do what we need to do. And yeah, we're pretty successful with all that.
And we matured together mm-hmm. in this process,
yeah.
Meaning, you know, we were different people 10 years ago than we are today.
Right.
And we matured in our faith, and that's kind of what drives this whole ship for us, mm-hmm. is our faith. That's what makes us be able to do what we do. But we both grew substantially, I would say, mm-hmm. in our faith. And now we're doing so many offshoots, too, that we've just grown so much in our faith.
Mm-hmm.
And we've matured together.
Mark, you were telling me that you have a special gift, and then, of course, Russ, you have a different angle to yourself when you're doing investigations. Didn't you say, Mark, to me earlier that, I can't remember if you've got the visualization point part, and Russ, you have the other. Tell each of us what those aspects are, and that will help everyone to understand why they seem to meld so well together.
Yeah, so I can typically, or you know, a lot of times see the spirits, and I can a lot of times sense how many are there. I can sometimes see them. I've seen a large group at one point gathering around us, and you know, like I said to you before, I can sometimes hear them talking to me, but that's more of Russ's gift. He'll mention that. So
yeah, so we like I just thinking of just two quick cases as testimony mm-hmm. or examples. Like one case we were at not too far from here, and I went in to the bedroom in question, and I just laid on the bed. It was a child's bed, actually, and there was a spirit that would not let the child into his room. So he would never go in there. I went in there and I said, you just need to tell me what the situation is, and let's work this out. Let's get some compromise. Let's figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
And as I lay there in the child's bed, and I had the meter laying on my arm like this, the end of the bed was here, mm-hmm. and he walked right up to me. I could measure him there as sure as ever, and I could feel him. And he explains to me that he was a World War II vet. He let me feel the injuries he had, where his pains were. He told me why. He said, this used to be my space. Now I have no space. There's kids, there's dogs, there's all kinds of stuff going on, and I have no space. I'm just trying to demand a space. And I said, why don't you take all the space up in the light and find peace? And we barely had to talk to him much more. And he was willing to cross over and went that night. And the child in the house, actually in the room underneath, slept for 3 days. And they brought her to the doctor. They're like, oh my gosh, what's going on? And the doctor said, well, she's just exhausted. They had no idea what she was suffering. And that's a common,
right.
A lot of people don't understand. They feel like they're doing okay with the spirit in the house, but there's almost always some type of symptom, whether it's noticeable or not, that they're experiencing. And once the spirit's gone, that's when all of a sudden it's noticed.
Right.
Interesting. That I don't think people realize that. I know that for myself, that in one of my homes, I had recognized that I probably brought something back with me from a haunted location. But at first I thought, oh, cool, I live with a ghost. You know, that was what I thought at first. And that was until it started strangling me or something else came in. And I was starting to be strangled, like literally three nights in a row. And some people would say, oh, that was like a sleep paralysis or apnea or whatever. No, it wasn't. I was really being strangled. And I had something scream in my ear and I had this happen. And then I had stuff around the house happening and all that sort of thing. And we moved from that house, unfortunately, into another haunted house, which when you become a beam or something like that, and I'm going to ask this question to either of you in just a second. Do you find that there's a certain thing about people that make them a beam? Because I know I'm a beam. I seem to draw this stuff to me. They seem to come to me. I don't know what it is. It doesn't seem to matter where I'm at. They try to say something or communicate with me in some way. And I'm completely, where other people would say, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have that experience. What are your thoughts on people and their abilities and why they turn into beams or whatever that bring this stuff to them? Any thoughts on that at all?
I think part of that's, so I think a lot more children are affected. Mm-hmm. And by the time you become an adult, you forget.
Yeah.
Some of us don't, mm-hmm. like myself, you know, Russ and yourself probably. Mm-hmm. And then your interest is still there. And I think that's, some of these people have gifts as well, and the spirits are just attracted to them because, hey, they can see me, they can hear me, they can,
right.
you know, and that they don't, until they know how to protect themselves or to shut it off or whatever, it just constantly happens. And it's very wearing, as you all know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we've experienced with the interviews we've done that a lot of people who have some type of gift or sensitivity, something has happened, you know, whether it be in an initial experience in the supernatural or some type of traumatic event, maybe an accident, a hospital visit where they were really sick, mm-hmm. or it might have been some violence. I mean, something triggers
right.
this sensitivity somewhere in their life,
mm-hmm.
and it becomes a, I always use like an equalizer where you got those push and mm-hmm. you push the levels up of your sensitivity based on your continued experiences. The more you experience, that slider goes up and up and up. Mm-hmm. And so we just refer to that as sensitivities. And most all those other ones all fit underneath that line of sensitivities or gifts,
mm-hmm.
based on the fact of where that slider is at in your life and how many experiences you've had.
Mm-hmm.
And the big thing is, the big thing is it just jumped out of my head. I had a whole second part to that and it's completely gone. Sorry.
It's okay. That happens to me every other minute. So I'm just like going, yeah, what's my name? it's called age, everybody. That's just the way it is. That's life. But I agree with you on that because I experienced trauma when I was like 3-4 years old. And of course, as a young tyke, you don't know what you're experiencing at all. And then over time with different types of things that happened to you, and I had ongoing different types of trauma. And I have to preface this too to people that trauma doesn't necessarily have to be the shock factor. You can experience trauma in very different ways and you're not even knowing that you're experiencing it. And then all of a sudden what it does is it kind of rips open something in your brain, and what it does is it rewires itself up there. It's that whatever it is, you know, it's fright or flight or whatever it is. And what it's doing is all of a sudden you find yourself opening up a different passage. And as we age anyway, we do change every actually 7 to 10 years. And so the way our brain is, and then it starts to die, by the way, at a certain age. And so then you got stuff repairing itself up there. Some people awaken very early. Other people, sometimes they awaken very late, and it just depends on what goes on, or if they get hit by lightning or whatever, you know, what goes on that all of a sudden brings about these abilities. And so I know both of you had talked about earlier that you were in the Army together at some point, and people would be interested to know if you, either of you, had abilities while you were in the Army and had experienced, of course, trauma or something so traumatic that maybe your light bulb gleamed brighter. How do you respond to something like that? So what do you think? You're in the Army. What do you think?
I would say for me, you know, it started when I was a kid, just the sensing and the seeing and all of that. And I don't really attribute anything as far as my gifts or anything like that to any event that happened in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
I think Russ had kind of alluded to this before, mm-hmm. that as we've done this more and more all throughout these years, we've grown and enhanced and all of that. So this is really where, for me, it's all come to fruition,
mm-hmm.
in this environment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, like you say, how things advance, I think as that sensitivity increases in you, sensitivity and faith together or separately, it changes in my mind, and I can't validate this for sure, but it changes the aura. It changes the intensity of light that you give off, and it becomes a beacon. Like you said, a beam or a beacon. Mm-hmm. People use a lot of different terms for that, but that's what they see. Mm-hmm. And that's to this day why I get spirits just show up at my office or show up to me just randomly, because out of a crowd of 50 people walking through the cities today, I saw a spirit there. Why? Because he knew that I was sensitive to the fact that he was there and chose to show himself to me, or whatever reason I saw him.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's that sensitivity that's important. But I don't think either that there was a incident that happened in the Army that had any effect on me. But once my sensitivities increased, it was dramatic, mm-hmm. how I handled going to different states,
mm-hmm.
and different things like that. Because there is, like when I travel now, it's just insane the different energies I pick up while I'm traveling. And some will be peaceful, some will be this, some will be that. And people randomly will come up to me with cases. Mm-hmm. Some of them don't even know who I am, and they'll just randomly, an incident, I'll be sitting out in Georgia in Savannah, and all of a sudden the antique guy out there is like, boy, I need help. And I'm like, funny you'd ask. You know,
what are your thoughts about the differences, especially when we're dealing with language, cultural differences and language barriers and stuff like that? Do you think that you can still communicate with your language to something that perhaps doesn't know your language? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there are some cases, like if I'm in a situation where I feel I'm in an area where I'm working with people that may not understand my language,
mm-hmm.
I have some terminology I use during the healing session, and I pre-announce, I'm speaking to you through Jesus Christ, which means you can understand me in all the words I say. And I just put that precursor in there. And again, you know, sometimes you have situations where your faith carries you. Can I validate all these moments that, okay, everybody understood? I can't really validate that. It's a situation where you have to have faith in things working. And if I call the client in 5 days and the client tells me, we haven't heard anything in 4 days, it's been quiet, and we follow up again a month later, it's still completely quiet, guess what? I validated the fact that somehow they understood me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they understood what I was asking of them. And that would be our validation.
Mm-hmm. Let's shift gears here for a second as we move into kind of the end of this show, but I want to make sure we get some interesting bits in here too. So what kinds of experiences have you put yourself through? I have, many of you can go to YouTube and put in, let's see, what would they put in on there in the YouTube so they can get to your videos? What would they put in? Search for spirits?
Search for spirits. Yep. All one word, the number four.
Okay. And we had kind of talked a little bit about this before the show. I do recall on a few of your videos, you've been out in the woods. Let's start with that one. And you've actually picked up on sounds or voices or things. What kinds of things have you experienced in the woods?
So one of the earlier times Russ and I went out, you could say on a Bigfoot hunt, we were walking on this trail and we heard this knocking in a tree.
Okay.
So we're like, oh, what's going on? That's pretty cool. So we walked up mm-hmm. and Russ was a little bit behind me, but I went up to the trees and I wanted to find out which tree was actually doing it and maybe we could figure out why. So I knocked on it. The first one with my knife, nothing there. I knocked on the second one, and all of a sudden, something huge went running off into the woods. I mean, it sounded like it weighed 500 pounds, but we didn't see it. But it went
45
off into the woods.
It did a 45 right in front of me, no more than 30 yards out at dusk, but plenty of light. Like footsteps of a 500-600 pounder.
It was just stomping off.
Stomping off through the woods.
Breaking branches.
It was nothing.
It was amazing.
Nothing there. We saw nothing.
Did you see the branches break? Did you see the path that it was creating?
I couldn't. I was behind the tree and it was starting to get dark enough. I couldn't see that.
Mm. Yeah, I couldn't see the sticks breaking, but I was following the noise. Like I say, it was right at dusk. I was following the noise. It ran off and then it cut across and did a half circle around us. And we just listened to it walk all the way in a half circle around us. It stopped. And then we tried to do a little communication, ended up walking away for a while, didn't follow us. So we came back about 30 minutes later, 20 minutes later to that same spot right where it had been. And same thing, it started circling us again a second time. So we knew it was there, we knew it was heavy, but we didn't physically see anything per se.
Huh, that would terrify me to death, I think. Just knowing that something was circling you and it felt heavy and it felt... Did it feel aggressive?
No.
No.
You know, and my hair stood up on the back of my neck. Mm-hmm. I felt it. On the other side of the tree, and it felt huge.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't look aggressive to me. It almost feels like we scared it.
Yeah,
just the way it ran off.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's the case, but that's what it seemed like. Yeah, it didn't.
Yeah, like was it trying to, like, we're walking a mile out in the woods, a quiet trail at dusk. The fact that one tree was making noise, was it trying to like warn us to stay back? Was it just saying, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here? You know, what is the message? Sometimes we don't know the exact message, but we know they're trying to send a message.
For me, it was come over to the tree and check it out.
Right. I mean, he picked up on it right away. Yeah. But
you know, the thing is you just hit on something really important here. What is the message, right? And so, Mark, you're thinking, oh, cool, come on over. It's kind of like a lure, okay? Is the message the lure to come on over the tree? Russ, you're like, let's think about this for a moment here. Is this something that it's warning us of? Or is it turning around and trying to say, this is my territory? What exactly is it trying to say? Did it throw rocks or anything at you?
Not in this case.
Not in this one. I mean, we've had so many experiences like that. But I would say this. There's been a couple cases we have been on where I did pick up on their communications. And the communications are always one of protecting their area.
Protecting their area.
Yeah. They have a specific area that they're using. And the one, literally... The guy that was with me in that case, was sitting about 100 yards down. I could hear the commotion. They were whacking at trees. Whatever it was whacking at trees, calling out with this shrilling scream. Amazingly loud, incredible scream that I heard plain as day. I thought something really bad was going on. I didn't know.
Yeah.
But as I sat there in my spot, something came up to me and said, we need help. We're getting too pinched in here. But they were showing me images that were not the most pleasant. They'd show me an image, you know, of a house burning or a road all dug up, or, you know, they're like, they're feeling really pinched. And so the imagery coming off of them is kind of, you know, they're not mean. You know, I've never felt a mean thing, but they're just trying to express through imagery in the best way they can that we need space. And mm-hmm. this is getting kind of serious.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about that, are you talking about you're seeing like in the future, like this area is going to be plowed down or something and made into a development or something like that, or like their space is being taken away from them for whatever reason? Is that what you're seeing?
That is exactly the case. The fact that more and more trails are being created, leaving less and less private spots.
Yeah.
There's less and less spots that are really kind of out there and quiet and on their own, where they have a space.
Yeah.
And just like the old World War II vet. I used to have this big giant space. I had this house to myself almost.
Right.
Now there's people everywhere.
Right.
And they're very conscious of the fact that they're losing and becoming tightened in.
But what I find most interesting is the fact that they can actually be invisible and have this invisible energy about them and not necessarily be a solid form. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that we've seen them in a number. We've seen them in kind of a gel type form. We've seen them in these giant orbs.
Mm-hmm.
Giant orbs that kind of flow through the woods.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but that said, are we talking about the same supernatural species in all these cases?
Right.
You may very well be talking about multiple, not just Sasquatch, Bigfoot, but multiple types of species that are on the earth and right. becoming more tight with space, just like Bigfoot is.
Mm-hmm.
They're also becoming tightened too. And so people are having a lot more unusual experiences,
right.
light flashes, people trailing them in the woods, invisible creatures.
Right, right.
Mothman, this, you know, all those, I can't say for a lot of those, but I know for the ones that we've run into, there's a lot of different things going on, and you can't explain it all underneath one term.
Tell everybody, if they want to reach out to you, how they can do that, and give us some information on how they might be able to reach out to you.
Okay. I think the two best ways is they can either email through searchforspirits@zoho.com or through Facebook messaging. That's probably one of the easier ways for us to contact you. We do have a phone number. It's kind of a Google number. And if you do happen to call that, it goes straight to an email anyway. So you might as well just email, but it's there as an option for people. But the Facebook messaging is probably our primary way that people contact us.
Okay. And what kinds of services or things would you expect someone to contact you about?
We do a lot of homes and businesses, but that being said, you know, we have a lot of cases where it's just unexplained. You know, we may get a call, and we get a lot of them actually from just somewhere way up in the woods, and they're like, I'm seeing strange lights in my woods. Can you come check it out? Or I'm hearing a ringing bell in my wall every morning at 6 o'clock. Can you come investigate it? You know, it's just unexplained. If it can't be explained and you're trying to figure it out, we may be able to offer tools or a different testimony of what other people have experienced. Because we've had, like I say, a couple hundred cases now of experiences that we can dial in on to help you understand maybe what's going on at your workplace, at your home, or out in your woods.
And of course, these gentlemen reside in Minnesota, and this program is heard all over the world and seen all over the world. And so I do believe, did you say that you might be able to chat with them either on Zoom or on the phone regarding their issue if they do not reside in Minnesota?
Absolutely. Yep. We'll take a call from anywhere and try to help them as much as we can.
And let me make sure that people understand that if it's a long distance type of thing, that these gentlemen aren't necessarily set up to pitch the entire cost here. So you might want to think about that in terms of, or whether or not they can offer a substitute or an alternative individual for you, whether it's in your country or state or whatever, to at least try to attempt to resolve what you need to get down to the bottom of. So, and I'll have all of this, gentlemen, in the show notes at the end for people to look at as well. Well, very, very interesting stuff. Very fascinating, very enlightening. And again, we'll have to have you back at a later time. On behalf of the show, Russ and Mark, thank you so much again for being on the show today.
Thank you, Dr. Kelly.
Thank you, Dr. Kelly.